I am very honored. I am very honored, very grateful, and very happy to be with you this evening. My special, very affectionate, and honorable gratitude to Yogi Vishwaketuji Madhavji for so lovingly opening their hearts to welcome me, and to each and every one of you for so graciously appearing this evening.
So many people. Hare Krishna. Chalo, chalo. Yes. Okay, good. Everyone here now. Look, it's plenty space even. Okay. Yes. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. How you all fit comfortably in this space is a test of your yoga. To adjust. What it means to be flexible. In India, it's very useful to be flexible. Not only physically in adjusting to the spaces we're in, but also internally, because the nature of this world, Bhagavad Gita tells, Matra sparashastu konteya sitos na sukha dukada agama payano nityas tams titikshasva bharata. That everything is always changing in this world. It's a place of inevitable dualities. Just like there's a coin in America, it's heads and tails, they say, the different sides of the coins. And if you may like the heads and not like the tails, but if you take one, you take the other also. And it's inevitable till that coin flips over to the other side. So similarly, if we want to enjoy happiness, then we have to accept the distress. There's pleasure and pain, honor and dishonor, happiness and distress, heat and cold, victory and defeat, success and failure, health and disease. And wherever there's one, the other is imminent. Because everything's always changing. by the power of time, nothing remains the same. And if there's an appearance that something's the same in this world, it's only because we're not having a subtle enough vision. Because time changes everything. As soon as a little baby is born, it starts becoming old. So how to be happy in a world like this? This wonderful ashram of Vishwaketuji, one of my favorite ashrams in all the world, is Ananda Prakash, the place that reveals the light of happiness, spiritual happiness. And spiritual happiness is a happiness that's not determined by the ever-changing conditions around us, or even of the mind. Because if we think that the world changes outside of us, the mind changes much faster. Even if it's hot out for so many months without getting cold, our mind could go from one extreme to the other in a moment. I think some of us have that experience. So yoga is to actually have a flexible body and mind, to be able to adjust to whatever situation comes in such a way that it doesn't disturb our peace, our happiness, and our love. And this is a very intimate understanding. What does it mean to not disturb our love? It means that it does not interrupt our being a well-wisher of others. The great Saint Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has written that when love awakens in our heart, its expression into this world is compassion, karuna. Karuna means a compassion that's not only a feeling, but it's a realization that is activated in every aspect of our life. Because the mind is like a mirror. And when you look in a mirror, what do you expect to see? Yourself. But if the mirror is covered by layers and layers of dirt and pollution and all sorts of dust, that's all you see. And you think, I'm that. So cheto darpanam marjanam bhava mahatavagni nirvapanam. The path of yoga is to clean the mirror of the mind so we can see our true self. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that true happiness, true intelligence, wisdom, is when our happiness and enlightenment is found within ourselves. And what is that happiness within ourselves? The Brahma Sutra tells, Anandamayo Bhyashat, something everyone has in common. We're all looking for pleasure. Whether it's the elephants of the Himalayan jungles that sometimes knock cars down, they're just looking for pleasure. And when you're looking for pleasure, you're also trying to protect yourself from what may cause you pain. And then there's the little insects, the mosquitoes that bite you. They're not trying to hurt you. They don't even know what it means to hurt somebody. They're just looking for pleasure. Their pleasure happens to be your blood. But you can't blame them because that's their nature. That's their guna, their karma, according to the Bhagavad Gita. So everyone's looking for pleasure. But according to the conditionings of our mind, our samskaras, and the gunas and karmas that were being, the influences of nature that we're being influenced by, people look for pleasure in different ways. But everyone's looking for pleasure. Things can give some pleasure to the body and mind for some time, but things can never give pleasure to the heart. Only love, to give love and to receive love, can give pleasure to the heart. And actual pleasure, actual fulfillment, is a state of the heart. It's not a state of the flickering mind or the flickering senses. And the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra, the Puranas, they all explain why that is, that we have this in common. Because it's the nature of the true self to be an anand. The living force within this body that animates the body and the mind is the Atma, or the soul. And the nature of that soul, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochatina Kanksati Sarava Saravesha Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. The nature of the soul is we are eternal, full of knowledge, full of anand, full of bliss. And when we actually connect with that state that's within us, when we awaken it, or in other words, when we clean the dust of the mirror of the mind and we actually see our true self, then nasochati nakankshati, then we're no longer obsessed with longing for what we don't have and regret and regretting for what we lose. We're no longer influenced by greed, envy, arrogance, illusion, selfish lust, when it's unfulfilled, anger. These are all like the dust, pollutants. But when the ecology of the heart is clean, then we transcend these situations. And the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, explains how. Apuryamanam achalapratishtam gives the example of the ocean. The ocean is so big and so full that the seasons really don't affect it. And the monsoon rainy season here in India, if you go to some rivers, they're miles wide. I've seen in Bengal and in Bihar, Mother Ganga, the same Mother Ganga that's here in the monsoon season, it looks like an ocean. You can't see the other side. It's 1 or 2 miles wide. And it's pouring huge volumes of water into the ocean. And in the summer season, Sometimes there's a little, sometimes rivers dry up and there's nothing going in the ocean. But the ocean's not disturbed because of its own fullness. So the reason why we're disturbed by all the dualities of this world is because of an emptiness in our heart, because of a disconnection from our true self and from God's love. But when we reconnect within, that journey within, then we find a happiness, a peace that expresses itself by sharing with others. Aham bija pratapita. Then we recognize, when we recognize our own relationship with God, with Krishna, with Ram, who has many names, then we recognize mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We recognize our relationship with everyone and everything. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani kavihastini suni chaiva svapakija pandita samadarshana. This is the Bhagavad Gita's definition of wisdom. Not how much data is accumulated in our brain, but true knowledge is when we see every living being with equal vision. Because vasamsi jinani yatha vihaya. We're not seeing any longer just the outer dress of the body. We're not seeing, the body is like the clothes, the Bhagavad Gita says, vasamsi jinani yatha, the clothes. And the mind is something like the underwear. And unfortunately in this world, so many people have dirty underwear. In other words, our minds aren't so clean. And for anybody who's ever lived with dirty underwear, it's a pretty miserable situation. So yada yada dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanam dharmatnas. Krishna comes again, God comes again and again and again in this world to tell us, clean your underwear. That's what our mothers and fathers used to teach us, yes? At least mine did. But I never listened to them till I came to India, then I understood there's something true about what they said. It's to clean the mind. To come in contact with the love of God that's within us. And then we can actually realize our love for every living being. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains it in this way, that when you put water on the root of a tree, that water naturally extends to every part of the tree. The leaves, the branches, the twigs, the flowers, the trunk, the bark. And similarly, when we actually connect with the love for God, for Bhagavan, for the Supreme Being that's within us, because every living being is part of that Supreme, our love extends to everyone. Suhridam sarva bhutanam. Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarva lokamaheshwaram suhradam sarva bhutanam kyatvamam shantim richchati. Shanti is such an important aspect of yoga. And Bhagavad Gita is explaining the formula in which we can connect and experience with everlasting peace. It's not based on the situations here. if you find peace within yourself, even if a nuclear bomb falls directly on top of your head, it cannot disturb your peace. But cell phones can. Unless you really get realized. Cell phones, they're kind of put you in a cell. But this peace that's within us, when the way to actually achieve it is to understand that the supreme object of all love and the supreme lover, Bhagavan, is the proprietor of everything. Why is there so much conflict in this world? Among nations, it's over land. Who has control over particular places of land? And there's wars, local wars, regional wars, world wars. It's all about who has control over land and people. And money, people are fighting over money, and people are fighting over fame and prestige and influence over others. There's so many reasons to fight in this world. And little children right in the house, they fight over who gets which toy. I spoke with a lady who was a marriage counselor. This is a few years ago. And she told me about a particular couple. They were both yogis. They were bhakti yogis. And they did other yoga too. And they were very, very nice people, but they had serious breakdown in their relationship. So they went to this marriage counselor. And the marriage was breaking more and more. Somehow or other, they were becoming intolerant toward each other. And the marriage counselor, my friend, she was trying to get to the root of it. And she found the root. Amazing. Incredible, wonderful, and very interesting also. The root of what started disintegrating their relationship was every morning for breakfast, the wife would give the end piece of the loaf of bread to her husband. And he considered this such an insult. Because she was doing it every day. You know, relationships could get very serious. It was a little thing, but little things could make a big difference. He didn't say anything. He just considered it such a betrayal of affection. So somehow or other, during one of their meetings, when they were trying to work things out, it came out. He said, "You, for the last several years, every day, you give me the end piece of the loaf of bread. There's like 20 good slices, and every day you give me the rejected part." He said, in the family I grew up with, we would give the end part to the dog. We would never eat it. You treat me like a dog. He was American. She started crying. She said, I was doing this out of love for you. She said, I'm from Italy. And in Italy, everyone in the family fights over the end piece. We don't like the middle pieces. We're all fighting for the end piece. She said, I was sacrificing what is most dear to me to give to you. I didn't get an end piece in all these years. He said, really? And they lived happily ever after. But it just shows how communication is so important in relationships. But when you water the root of the tree, then naturally it extends toward every part of the tree. So when we awaken our love for God, for Krishna, for Bhagavan, for Ram, within our hearts, it naturally extends to love the soul within the heart of everyone. And this particular verse in Bhagavad Gita tells Vidyavanaya Sampani that this knowledge, we see everyone with equal vision. Whether one is an elephant, or a cow, or a dog, or a cat, or a bird, even a human. And among humans, whether one's white or black or red or yellow or brown, or whether one is male or female or rich or poor or from India or Pakistan or Israel or Palestine or Russia or America, these are all just external coverings. But the soul within, wherever there's life, is a part of God. How could we not feel love for that? We may not love what people do, but we should be motivated by the nature of the soul. That is called seva. When we're living in harmony with the nature of our true self, that is yoga. When the body is harmonized with the mind, and the mind is harmonized with the intelligence, and the intelligence is harmonized with the Atma, with the soul, and the soul is harmonized with God, and then our being is harmonized with all other living beings, and our being is harmonized with nature. The idea of environmentalism is very much a part of yoga. Because sarva loka maheshwaram, if everything is the property of the Supreme, of Bhagavan, then our joy is seva, to serve, not to exploit. We don't need stuff to be happy. To serve with love is what gives us true happiness. And if we work for stuff, and we utilize that to serve with love, that's true happiness. And if we don't have anything, it really doesn't matter, somehow or other, if we're happy within. The Gita tells that all living beings we see with equal vision. Whether one is a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian or a Jain or a Buddhist or a Sikh or a Parsi or an agnostic or an atheist. We're all brothers and sisters. And this is a nice theory, but it's only sustainable when there's self-realization. That's the greatest need in this world. There's a beautiful story of Hanuman. When I was coming up the stairs, Vishwaketuji, in his room that he took me, there's a wonderful little statue of Hanuman. And Hanuman is carrying Ram and Lakshman on both of his shoulders. And he's standing on only one leg. And he seems to be very effortless. So there's a beautiful story when they were building the bridge across the Indian Ocean to rescue Sita. Then Hanuman was lifting mountains, huge mountains. He was a yogi raj. He had such strength. But what was his strength? His strength wasn't based on physical muscles. We never see paintings of Hanuman weightlifting. And he doesn't train lifting mountains. He just lifts mountains whenever he needs to do so in his seva. His strength is his bhakti, his love, his sharanagati, his surrender. Because he's completely, with no ahankar, no ego, he's surrendering his heart to be an instrument of God's love. God is giving him such incredible powers. He doesn't think about what he could do or not do. He just thinks, what does Ram want me to do? He could jump across oceans. He could lift mountains. He could make stones float in the sea. And as he was building this bridge with gigantic boulders he was carrying, and Ram and Lakshman on his shoulders. And there was a little spider, and that spider was trying to help build the bridge. And you know what a spider's leg is? They're not very strong. So the spider, with all of his might, I don't remember, I was never told whether it was a girl or boy spider. But that little spider with all of her might, with her little leg, was going and pushing one grain of sand at a time on the bridge. And, you know, and Hanuman was like, mountains. he put the mountain peak in the ocean and go, and the spider is one grain at a time. So the spider was doing her seva, and Hanuman was waiting, because you know, Hanuman would never step on a little spider. So he was holding this mountain, and he was waiting for the spider to get out of his way. And then Ram, who was on his shoulder, he said, Hanuman, spider is doing exactly as much as you are. Ram said, I don't see the quantity, I see the quality. I see the purpose and the intent of a person. You are doing the best you can to show compassion to Sita, to serve me. And this little spider is doing the best that she can. So bhakti is about our intent, about our purpose. And when our intent and our purpose is harmonized with our own spiritual nature, it becomes yoga, it becomes seva. And then the result, Ananda Prakash. Then true happiness, sustainable, eternal happiness is awakened and revealed to us, the light of true happiness. There's a beautiful verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, Savai Pong Sang Puro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Rokshaje Ahoitaki Apratihata Yayatma Suprasitati. That the supreme Dharma, Dharma means religion, Dharma means occupation, Dharma means nature. Dharma has many different definitions and it includes all of them. But the supreme Dharma is that which awakens love. Love for the supreme. Compassion to all living beings. And in order for that love to actually satisfy ourself, it must be unmotivated by selfishness or egoism. And uninterrupted by ever-changing circumstances. Because we could all do our best. We could all try our best. Kalera dosani de rajan asti heka mahanguna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha parambrajet. In this age of Kali, it's a time, it's like a season where there's so much tendency for people to be unsatisfied, to have conflict, to quarrel, hypocrisy. There's a special benediction that simply by chanting the names of God with sincerity, with humility, with Sharanagati, taking shelter of the divine sound of God's names, one can attain the supreme perfection of liberation. That's what this verse is telling. Nam nama kari bahuta nija sarva shaktis. Because there are many names of the supreme that have been revealed throughout the ages in different places. And each of these divine mantras or names, if they're they're invested with the sweetness, the beauty, the power, and the love of God. Tasmat sankirtanam Vishnu jagad mangalamanghasam mahatam apikoravya vidye kantkarniskritam. That of all auspicious activities, Jagan Mangalam, that the most auspicious activity in all the universe is when people come together to chant in Kirtan. Nama Sankirtanam Vishnu. So Kirtan is enjoyable. Kirtan unites us. When we leave our egos behind and we're all singing for the same purpose, to purify our own hearts and purify the world. It unites our hearts with God and with each other. And Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, the dust of the mirror of the mind could be cleansed. So Kirtan is supremely powerful, process of yoga that cleanses the heart and awakens our immortal, spiritual, loving nature. But it's very important that whatever we do, it's done with sincerity. So I was told by my beloved friend and guide Vishwaketuji that many of you have been doing teacher's training 200 hours for the last 1 month. Please raise your hand if you're part of this group. And he said it's the hardest teacher's training course. And you have to begin your training at 5:30 every morning. 5:20. Yeah. 5:20 every morning. And you say that with such happiness. On the banks of the river Ganga and the Himalayan mountains, you're doing 200 hours of teacher's training. And he said everyone's really tired and they really want to have a nice kirtan. So let us have a nice kirtan. And I'm going to teach you how Lord Chaitanya and my beloved guru, Srila Prabhupada, he took this message of bhakti, Bhagavad Gita and Sankirtan to the whole world. And he taught us a particular dancing step that, because he taught us, we called it the Swami step. Can I teach you? Who's the best person to demonstrate? Okay. This is the chance you've been waiting for. So, in India we have pranam, or namaskar. And we're offering our sincere respect and affection to the divine being within every heart. So it's a welcome, it's also swagatam, welcoming. So we're welcoming the divine name, the presence of the Supreme, of Krishna, into our hearts. That is the feeling, that is the state of consciousness we're in when we're going like this, and we're hearing through sound, transcendental sound, that this mantra. And then in response, when you're chanting, please raise your arms very high, like this. And this is it's like a asana of Sharanagati, where we're seeking shelter and we're giving shelter. We're seeking shelter of grace, of the divine supreme power of grace that's descending in this mantra. It's something like tuning in to the frequency of grace. Just like today, we have these televisions that have satellite channels, and there's like 100 channels or more, and you just press a button, and you're watching a soap opera, and somebody's crying, and there's somebody laughing, and then and you're seeing the news in Washington D.C. And then you see some rock concert in Poland, and so there's so many. How does that happen? You just press a button because you're tuning into a frequency that's already there. So there's so many frequencies in this world. There's a frequency of arrogance, and there's frequency of selfishness, and there's a frequency of the tendency to fight, and there's a but there's also the divine frequency of grace. And when we tune our consciousness into calling out these names with concentration and with feeling, we're tuning into that frequency of grace, and then we become energized by that grace. We become filled with that grace. Ananda Prakash, love and happiness reveals within our heart through that grace. And with the same gesture of our arms, like antennas, we're not only receiving, but we're emitting that grace and filling the world with it. So as I'm singing, please go like this. And as you're singing, please, Sharanagati, seeking shelter and giving shelter and seeking shelter and sharing that shelter. And there's also something to do with the feet. And he's going to show you. Put your left foot in front of your right foot and your right foot in front of your left foot, and then put your left foot in front of your right foot. Like that. Everyone, please stand up.